Good morning. It is now 8:30, and I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for January 26, 2023. There is a quorum present. The third item on our agenda this morning is to move approval of the minutes. Representative Berg, would you like to move the minutes for January 24th, 2023?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I so move.
We have a motion before us. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are, oh, excuse me, I forgot to vote on it. All in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is adopted and the minutes are approved. And this morning we have a full agenda of presentations for the budget request this year. We'll begin with Auditor Blaha. Please come forward and state your name for the record, and please begin your presentation.
Great. Good morning, and good morning. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, Vice Chair Hewitt, and Lee Nash, and members of the committee. My name is Julie Blaha, and I am your state auditor, who is going to get her system back up just in a second here.
Excuse me, Auditor Blaha, while you're getting that ready, I would just like to make a comment to the committee. Before you, we have rather large binders. Inside these binders, you will find the full requests for each of the agencies in our jurisdiction. You will receive one binder. You can choose whether to leave it in the committee room and have it brought back and forth. If you choose to take it to your office, it is totally your responsibility. We will not be making another binder for you. And you can find all of the information online if you need it in another location as well. So I will leave it with that. And with that, please, Auditor Blaha, begin your presentation.
Thank you. Again, thank you, Chair Cleavorn and members. Again, I'm Julie Blaha, your state auditor, and joining me today is operations manager, director, of the OSA, Matt Lindemann. So if he's okay, we trade off as we present here today. And as fun as the book is, we also have a short version that we have given you here. So you have a cheat sheet for us. The Cliff Notes version was attached, but it is pulled pretty directly from your binder there. So essentially, what we thought we'd do is we'd start with just a quick review, very short review of how our budget is structured, and then go into the situation we're in and how we built our proposal and the proposal itself. The focus is we are working to make sure we can respond to demands from the public that are more than reasonable. And doing it in a time of some unique challenges. So with that, let's start out with a basic reminder of how our budget works.
Madam Chair, my name's Matt Lindemann.
Sorry, I'm like hearing a voice that I wasn't expecting. Please proceed. Thank you.
My name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Office of State Auditor, and I just want to give you a quick overview of the funding of the Office of State Auditor. The office has seven divisions and is primarily funded by a general fund direct appropriation, with one exception being our Tax Increment Financing, or TIF division, which is funded by a statutory appropriation. The appropriation is funded from a deduction of 0.36% of tax increment distributed to TIF authorities each year. In addition, the audit work performed by our audit division is recovered through audit fees that are deposited in the general fund as non-dedicated revenue. And finally, approximately 75% of the cost of our pension division is used to reduce as a reduction to fire state aid.
All right. So to go back then, to talk basically a quick history of our appropriation. So this century at the OSA, we started out in I have a graph up here of our inflation adjusted appropriations. It's constant dollars that you're looking at. Now, a couple fun facts. From 2014 to about 2017, we also had our fees were put into an enterprise fund. So as a result, there's an asterisk by those because I've added the enterprise fund in there, not pure appropriation. And then we went back away from that where it's simply we get the appropriation, and any fees just go directly back to the general fund. So what you'll see is, you'll see in the early 2000s that we had approximately what in today's would be about 32 million dollars per biennium in funding. Then you see the recession hits. That's 2004, 2006. We see a bit of a recovery after the recession, but not back to the place where we were. Then some erosion, and then a bit of an uptick. And so where we're sitting right now is we're approximately down about 21% in funding when you compare it to, say, 2002, which was a little more typical of the time before that. That has resulted in a drop of over 35% in staffing. Since that time as well. And then at the end, we'll show you the stunning conclusion where if we were to get this budget proposal through, where that would put us in comparison to this. Again, this is, I think, typical of many state agencies. I don't think this is the only time you'll see this story. Okay. All right, so let's take a look at the where we are and where we came to this. One of the reasons when we create a budget proposal, we look at what are Minnesotans demanding of us and compare it to our capacity. When we did that this year, we saw three significant demands. One, a response. We need to respond to increased public scrutiny. I think we're seeing that all over the country. It's always a hot topic among auditors nationally, is how much more engaged the public is in wanting to know where the tax dollars are going. In addition, we are experiencing significant staffing shortages, particularly in audit, which is another national issue, where to the point that we even have private firms calling us up and asking us if we can take some of their clients. And we're all in that place right now. So anyone here with an accounting background, let's chat after this. But also ongoing, and on our, one of our bigger risk factors is one that sometimes flies under the radar because it's small entities. Small entities, because they have smaller staffs and they're stretched thinner, there's inherent risk in that small size. And so if you look in our investigations, a lot of them involve small entities that have been victims of fraud, partly because they have so few people that can keep an eye on the store. So when we provide support there, it's a great way to head off fraud. So let's get specific. If we take a look at our operating adjustment, again, our operating adjustment is basically so that we can maintain our current work. And Director Lindemann will go through details there.
Madam Chair, so for the operating adjustment change item, for this change item, we'll preserve 9.7 positions in our office. For the biennium, we are requesting $1.5 million increase in our general fund appropriation. The change item will generate $866,000 in audit fees for a net fiscal impact of $643,000. The increase is primarily due to increases in salary and benefit costs.
One thing that's interesting, though, because one of the reasons this has not been quite as high as it might have been is we've had a significant number of retirements. Mm-hmm. So as a result, those retirees are being replaced with newer people. And it's also one of the reasons that our audit rates that we charge local entities have remained flat for 3 years. All right. So let's take a look at then. So given, again, now we're looking at how are we going to support, staffing challenges and still wanting to get lots done. One way we can do that is with keeping up with state-of-the-art audit tools. There are some great technologies out there that can help us both increase our efficiency and also help us dig deeper into the examinations we do.
So, Madam Chair, for the audit tool change item, for the biennium, we're requesting $140,000 increase in our general fund appropriation to purchase electronic auditing tools for our audit division. We perform approximately 85 financial audits of local governments each year, and we perform the state single audit each year. We already use some electronic tools in the work we do. This request would pay for tools that allow us to analyze large data sets and manage and schedule audit work and staff.
I think I had this question one of our meetings that we've been doing ahead of time. And again, I want to thank everybody for being so generous with their time. This is not software we're developing. This is software that's out there that's being used, that's been tested in situations like ours. All right. Our next option is another thing that will help us with supporting our staff. and that is administrative support. We right now only have a few administrators for a large staff, and as a result, we have our professionals working on things not related to their work that could vary. This is a way to help people stay focused on the work that they do best.
So, Madam Chair, for the administrative support change item for the biennium, we're requesting $804,000 increase in our general fund appropriation to hire four administrative support staff and one account clerk. The administrative support staff will work as a team to help all divisions with their administrative needs and allow lawyers, analysts, auditors, and other professional staff to focus on their areas of expertise. The account clerk will also support all divisions by allowing other staff to focus on important projects.
All right. So next, let's take a look at technology, going a little deeper into technology. We are looking to, again, keep up with the state of the industry, and our technology has grown in great ways. Again, we've really expanded how we get our data out to the public, how we work our data for you, and as a result, we are ready to expand that role as well.
So, Madam Chair, for the technology staffing change item, for the biennium, we are requesting $511,000 increase in our general fund appropriation to hire a chief information officer, CIO, and one computer/network administrator who would support the electronic tools in our audit division. Currently, one person functions as the chief financial officer, CFO, CIO, in addition to overseeing the day-to-day operations of the OSA. A separate CIO would be able to focus on the OSA's technology needs and the ever-present cybersecurity risks.
All right. Now, moving on to responding again to some of that other increased demand. Taking a look at our legal investigations division staffing, we are looking for increasing our special investigators. When this division was established by Auditor Dayton, still call him that. It was about over twice as big as it is right now, and we really want to be able to respond to some very important inquiries and tips that we get from the public.
So, Madam Chair, for the legal/special investigation staffing change item, for the biennium, we are requesting $734,000 increase in our general fund appropriation to hire two certified fraud examiners, investigators, and one paralegal for our legal/special investigations division. Currently, the matters reported to special investigations must be triaged, and the extra investigators will allow us to examine more of these issues. Also, the paralegal would allow attorneys to spend more time on activities that require a higher level of legal analysis.
And our final area is, again, getting at that small size risk area. This year, for instance, 158 townships did not require reporting to us, and that has been an ongoing trend. Now, there is no penalty for them not to report to us. The problem is we see a high correlation between entities that do not report and entities that end up in our investigations division. And so the way we have been most effective in remediating this, a penalty is helpful. I'm not asking you for a penalty today. However, one-to-one support has been even more successful than that. This is a structure we use with our fire relief associations, all of whom reported on time this year. When we have that person to have that one-to-one contact, we're often able to get people on track, which, again, has benefits years out into the future.
So, Madam Chair, for the Township Specialist change item, for the biennium, we are requesting $229,000 increase in our general fund appropriation to fund a Township Specialist position in our Government Information Division. GID collects information from over 3,300 local governments, including 1,781 townships. Each year, a significant number of townships fail to complete their reporting requirement. This position would work with these townships to help them meet their obligation and answer their accounting and reporting questions. 53% of towns have populations of 300 or less.
So let's take a look at the bottom line here. So basically, our proposal will increase the OSA portion of the state budget by less than 0.006%. Now, that is calculated if nothing else goes up. So if we had this year, if we had had this extra appropriation, we would have not been 0.044% of the state budget. We would have been 0.05% of the state budget. Now, this would recover about half of the drop over the last several years. As you take this green bar, would be if this proposal were to be enacted, where we would be in the trend. Of course, look back, it might change a little bit because, of course, I'm not casting forward inflation, but this is where we would be if this were to pass. Again, we're about going about halfway back, but more importantly, we will be shoring up the infrastructure to respond to a challenging environment and still working to serve Minnesotans with their oversight needs, particularly at the local level. And so with that, we are available for questions.
Members, do you have any questions? Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Auditor Blaha, sorry, your biennial budget request, is it reflective of the eventual passage and impact of the paid family medical leave bill that's being moved through the legislature very quickly? Because I have every expectation with the trifecta that it'll pass. Have you built that into your budget?
You know, Auditor Blaha.
No, we have. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Cleaver and Lead Nash. We haven't. You know, here, one thing, though, I would like to say that I think this brings up a really important point. Right now, since hiring is such a challenge, I would rather have to try to find a way or even have to cut a position rather than have five positions left vacant because people won't take them because we don't have the benefits they need. So this kind of, I think, gets even at a wider topic of pay for, say, MATE members. MMA asked me, the unions in my office, I would rather deal with that problem than not have the compensation to even get anybody in the door. Great question.
Thank you, Auditor Blaha. Lead Nash?
Yeah, follow up to that, Madam Chair. I'm not sure that it's going to be able to be offset by the removal of one or two FTEs, so I would encourage you and for everyone listening, both now and in the future, that's going to be a standard question that I ask, because if you're going to pass a bill this year and you're going to set your biennial budget, you're going to maybe need to think about that and present that as an actual request in your bill, because I think Representative Kosnick has a point here in a little bit as to the number of FTEs that you're going to be adding. But the number becomes profound, and the financial impact becomes even more profound if you pass this bill. And from all intents, at the breakneck speed that things are moving, I have every expectation that it'll be signed into law probably before we even leave this first year of the biennium. So as budgets get revised, I think that Minnesotans are going to want to see what they're going to be put on the hook for, because that spending is going to be real, the impact is going to be real, and your budget should reflect that.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Auditor Blaha, I have to say that it's been one term since I've sat on this committee, and I remember you coming to us during that first term and discussing many needs of the office. And where I kind of connect into this is looking at our public safety sector, the fire that you've been working with, and the other aspects, and where things may grow in that area as we do have legislation that probably will have dollars to it. And we talked about this in the office, and you were very open to, you know, how does that look? Because we are probably undoubtedly going to have more audits, but it's about public safety. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to that, because I think it's really important that the state know that you've been an auditor and had your office in this position of really meeting people where they're at, because you know the fire audits were all over the place late, and you helped them, and you know their lifestyles. You know that maybe it was going up the Canadian border and meeting with them at 7 p.m. at their dinner table to help them move through this. And I really got to thank you for that, because the Metro, we think everything's like us, right? But outstate's a whole different world, and you've really come to that and met that challenge, and thank you for that. I think it's been great, and I look forward to supporting your office. Thank you.
Chair Cleavorn, Vice Chair Hewitt, again, appreciate those comments. I'll definitely take that back to our pension division, who works so hard on that. But that is also, that kind of gets at that, where, again, that small, those small entities. That's another reason we develop our software CTAS, which is basically QuickBooks for local governments in Minnesota that are small. And it is those kind of technologies and that kind of service that I think not only helps people just do their job more effectively, it also keeps us all out of trouble. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And appreciate your time here this morning, looking over the presentation. So it's like 21.7 FTEs new. Is that, am I reading that right? Or how many, what's the addition of the adding people?
I'm not.
If we want, thank you, Chair Cleavorn and Representative Kosnick. I believe you too. I think you might be looking. It's not each year we add them on. We just the costs are cast forward from year to year. So I believe it's 11, if I have that right. So we've got 5 and 2, that's 7. And what the trick is, when you look at the operating adjustment. Again, this is why it's a great question. Remember that operating adjustment is maintaining those positions. If we don't get the operating adjustment, those are the positions we cut. They're not new positions in the operating adjustment. So I think that might be where the calculation is a little opaque. Thank you.
Thank you, Auditor Blaha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up and clarify, so it's 11?
Yes. I'm going to double count that. I'm going to count that right here just to make sure I've got that. Yes. It's 11, right. I'm just making sure.
And how many do you currently have in your office,
Auditor Madam Blaha. Chair?
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, Representative Kosnick, 72.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I would just...
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to point out, as we're... Governor's released his budget, and Minnesota taxpayers are wondering, the question that we've been hearing for almost 2 years is, how are we going to return the surplus? Is it going to be a rebate check? Are we going to have permanent tax cuts? Are we going to cut the Social Security tax and eliminate that? In what manner and shape is this body going to adjust for that? But what I'm seeing and what we saw in the budget is a 25% growth in state government, where families are now realizing they might not get a dime of the surplus back, and I think that's unfortunate and a missed opportunity by this body if that's the route we go, and this budget reflects that.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick, and I would just like to say it's the legislature that does the appropriation, right? So it's going to be our conversations that'll drive that work. So thank you, Auditor Blaha. I have a question. Are there any other? My question to you has to do with the statement was made that you do a single state audit. And I'm not sure that the general public knows what that means. Could you please just say a little bit more about that?
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. That's a great question. We like to throw a lot of terms around here, and I know you're definitely get a few of those thrown at you. The statewide single audit, a single audit is simply an audit that is on a single subject. It's an extra set of examinations that are required for, in these cases, in Minnesota, required by the federal government. So if you get a grant of, say, over $750,000, they require an extra set of tests, an extra set of examinations, not a whole audit, just an audit on their single subject, on their area. That audit is often performed by whoever does your regular financial audit, is just part of it, but it can be done as a standalone, too, so it's done both ways. The Office of Legislative Auditor was doing the statewide single audit up through 2021, up through the year end 2020. And if you want to talk about year ends, I can certainly walk through the details of that. We begin taking over the statewide single audit in the late fall of 2021. And what's great about that is it falls in a kind of a hole in our schedule. Since the state's on a different fiscal year than the local governments are, it's a way to increase our work without necessarily having to increase our staff because we're able to move things around because of the way it's scheduled. It really balances out our schedule a lot. And it's an important thing to be still in the public sphere, the audit of what can be over $20 billion in federal funding.
Thank you, Auditor Blaha. Representative Nadeau, I'll let you have the last question to the auditor, if you'd like to ask your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Auditor Blaha. I just wanted to follow up on one question, and then I want you to expand on one thing. I just want to make sure I heard this right. You said you have 72 FTEs.
Auditor
Chair, yes, Chair Cleavorn, Representative Nadeau. We have 72 hired at this moment. We do have some vacancies. So we have approximately 10 vacancies right now. Some of them are from retirements and, well, with several, they're all from retirements. And so we are still in the process of filling. So by the way, the next round of postings go up in beginning of February. So again, if you're interested.
So you have?
Representative Nadeau.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's
okay. So you have 82 funded FTEs. You have 72 employees.
True.
Okay. Okay. So there is a big difference between an FTE that's fully funded and actually having the cost of an employee. So I just want to make sure that that's built in here, because you're asking for an increase in FTEs, and if you already have the FTE contingent and the funding for it, then why do we need to increase the FTEs? I think that'll be my final question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Auditor Blaha.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, Representative Nadeau. That's a really very good question. There's a part of this proposal that is to support the challenges we have in hiring. So these things, these positions, those vacancies are in audit. One is a lawyer, and one is, a tech position that we're in transition to fill. These positions now support that, because even if we were, as we fill those vacancies, we are still going to need this support. And let's remember, too, that the high watermark for staffing in our office was back, it was about 150 staff was the high watermark in our office at the beginning of the century, late last century. So these are not necessarily new positions. We are recovering things that have been cut over the years. We only go about halfway back in that recovery. So these are different positions that help us basically keep those other positions filled.
Thank you, and I would like to thank you both for being here this morning and presenting to the committee so we have a better understanding of your needs. With that, we will move on.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Thank you, Vice Chair Hewitt and Lead Nash, and all of you for being, again, so generous your time. I can't wait to keep talking about this with you.
Next. Okay, next we will have Deputy Commissioner Bitter-Ratan. And members, you have an additional handout that was brought to us. Color handout that will be going. Our technology is ready to go.
Not just yet.
All right. There we go.
Oh, wonderful.
Life is good when technology works. I think that'll be part of the conversation we're about to have. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. If you'll identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Britta Raton. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota Management and Budget. And today I'm here before you to present the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's budget recommendations for MMB for FY24 and 25. So from accounting and budgeting to human resources and employee development, MMB provides central essential services that are the backbone of state government and foundational to every program and service the state provides. MMB provides the tools, the talent, and the training that help ensure services for Minnesota's people, businesses, and communities are delivered efficiently and effectively. So the proposals before you today are about securing and maintaining the services we have. They are also about enhancing and transforming government broadly to better serve the people of Minnesota into the future. Throughout the presentation, you'll get a sense of the wide-ranging issues that MMB has purview over. Because of our role within state government to provide agencies with the building blocks necessary to fulfill their own missions, the bulk of these budget recommendations are really enterprise recommendations and not just about the operations of MMB. So that's a list of our overall, if you go back one, George, thanks. A list of our overall recommendations, and we'll just go through each of these one at a time. So if you'll go to the next slide, George. This first recommendation is funding for our state's ERP systems, or our enterprise resource planning systems. I just want to first start by talking about the broad scope of these systems. The systems support the work of state government in the areas of accounting, human resources, payroll, learning management, and this system also provides the warehouse of data that we do all of our reporting against. It can't be overstated that these systems are really foundational to the operations of every agency in state government and every program in state government. They touch every payment made by state government and facilitate the compensation and benefits for every state employee. Currently, we do not have a sustainable and adequate funding model to enhance these systems and maintain these systems. For too long, we have been underfunding these core enterprise needs. Both external consultants that have worked with MMB and the OLA in an audit in 2018 have pointed out that we need a sustainable, reliable funding model for these core systems that support state government. So before I dive into the ask, I want to highlight that this ask really represents the beginning of a multi-phased process. We know that ultimately we need to migrate to the next generation technology for our ERP. And this ask is putting us on a course to do so. There are many issues with not providing adequate funding for the operations and maintenance of a system that's this integral to the operations of state government. There is risk from both a security perspective of these systems and from a performance perspective. We have not had sufficient resources to update our systems on the schedules that are needed, meaning historically, we have done one update on a system at a time where other systems are falling out of support in that time period, and then we catch up on the next system. So we have not had adequate funding and staffing to be keeping all of our systems updated and upgraded at the same time. Additionally, we're currently not able to make enhancements to the system that users are requesting. This results in agencies implementing their own subsystems or side systems to meet their needs, thus creating inefficiencies, rather than are making the needed improvements in a way that benefits the entire enterprise. We have agencies doing things on a one-off basis because we don't have the resources at MMB to meet those needs centrally. So turning to the next slide is a chart about our funding for these systems. And what I really want to make sure is clear to all of you is that we have reached a critical tipping point with our systems funding. We currently spend on average approximately $22 million per year to maintain and operate these systems. And I just want to pause there and make sure it's clear that that $22 million a year is the resources we have available. That's not the amount we think is necessary in order to adequately maintain these systems. So we spend $22 million a year, but only $19 million a year of that funding is from ongoing, reliable sources. Under current law, we have the authority to bill other agencies in state government $10 million per year to support these systems. And that amount is capped in law. And the last time that cap was raised was 2014. The remainder of our sustainable funding comes from MMB's general fund appropriations, as well as other MMB funding sources, such as our CGIP fund, or our state employee group insurance program, as well as our enterprise training and development program. They contribute sustainable funding to this as well. So there's $10 million that comes from our billing of other agencies. There's $9 million that comes from MMB resources, getting us to that sustainable funding of $19 million. We've been supporting, in recent years, approximately $3 million per year of the ongoing maintenance and operations of the systems using one-time resources. Primarily, the source has been accrued balance in our statewide systems billing account that had accrued kind of in the early years of SWIFT. So we had a balance in that statewide systems account from years ago that we have been spending down. We are at the point now where those reserves are completely depleted in this year. We were originally projecting them to be depleted even sooner than that, but have been kind of working to make our way through this year, but still projecting those reserves to be depleted by the end of this year. which means starting next year without additional resources, instead of having the $22 million we have been spending, which we already feel is inadequate, the resources would drop to the $19 million that comes from sustainable funding. So I just want to make it very clear that without additional investment into these systems, we don't get the status quo. We get less than the status quo. So I want to move to our recommendation for these ERP systems.
Excuse me, before you move on, can I just ask one question? I should have asked this the other day when I was speaking with you. And if you don't have the answer today, no worries, but I'd like to know. So this $10 million cap that's in place, if we were to adjust that for inflation, what would that number be today? Do you know?
Madam Chair, it's a great question. I don't have that answer. That's a calculation we could quickly do, though, and provide you with that information.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Please continue.
So our recommendation calls for both short-term and long-term solutions to sustainably funding these systems. In the short term, we're requesting general fund resources to maintain our systems, meaning adequately funding their operations and maintenance. This includes filling that gap I was talking about in our support currently to fill the gap in the one-time resources we will no longer have available to us. But it also means providing resources to enhance our systems. So strengthening the security features of our system, that's something we have not been resourced enough to do, as well as beginning to transition our systems to the cloud. And then meeting the service needs of our agency partners in an ongoing way. In addition, we're seeking general fund money to begin the work of moving to the next generation of ERP by mapping our current business processes in building a business case to evaluate next generation ERP solutions. Our long-term strategy for sustainable, reliable, adequate funding of these systems is to lift that statutory cap. So eliminate the cap on our ability to bill our agency partners for the operations and maintenance of the systems, as well as for the enhancements of the systems. We would suggest lifting that cap in FY 2026. So that would give us a couple of years to work with our agency partners to get that system in place and to build that into future budgets. Another key piece of this is establishing an agency advisory group to help us evaluate the needs of agencies and the expectations of agencies in terms of the operations and maintenance, but also the enhancements of the system. And that advisory group would be advising on the management of the systems, the enhancement of the systems, as well as then the billing. So with that completes the presentation on the ERP portion of our ask. And I'll move to the next, if at this point. Okay.
Please proceed.
So this next ask funds the existing.
Excuse me. Sorry. There was a question.
Oh.
And I know Representative Bonner had one, too, so. She'd like to go first. Well.
Representative Cousins, please go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, I was exposed to you had mentioned the cloud, moving towards the cloud, a software program, ERP program of Workday. Are you familiar with that? And what are your thoughts on it?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Koznick, I'm familiar with it. I'm not sure I can really opine on whether, you know, that would be a good solution for the state at this point. We're a long way from making those sorts of determinations. But I'm aware that I believe MnState is working with Workday right now to implement a new system.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know a couple other government agencies and the state of Iowa has moved to it, apparently. Okay. Something to consider. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. A clarification and a question. The one is, I just wanted to be sure that I know we had a lot of information compressed just now, but I want to be very clear and make sure that I'm confirming with you. So what we're saying is that we are capped at a certain amount of money that we can collect from state agencies, right, at $10 million. We also have a certain cost of what it cost us to actually deliver those services. For the past several years, we have been covering a gap in between what it costs us and the money that we have available to cover that debt, right? That fund is now depleted, and so we have no more money in order to cover that gap, which means that the only way continuing forward, if we do not do something, would be basically to diminish the services that we can provide, correct?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's exactly correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure that we're all clear on what that all means. And then
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. So the question that I have then is, you mentioned the idea of removing the cap and putting it out to 2026 to give us some additional time for planning. But what I'm not sure I heard, and maybe I missed it, was how we cover the gap in between. Because I assume if we don't lift that cap initially, we're still at the very minimum at a $3 million deficit for 2023, 24, 25, and into 26. So how, I just want to make sure that I didn't miss or misunderstand you, how we intend to cover that gap until we have the ability to make the transition if we were to approve this request.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Bonner, thank you. I want to make sure that point is clear. We're requesting general fund resources in 24 and 25. And those general fund resources are not just to cover that gap. There's also inflationary pressure on the cost. So we've been spending on average $22 million a year. We think that amount was already inadequate. There's inflationary growth. So we're covering that gap. We're covering inflation. And then we're also adding more resources to better maintain and manage these systems. So that's why we have the general fund ask that we have in 24 and 25. And that ask actually continues into the tails so that as we lift the cap and bill state agencies, we're really billing agencies for those extras that we decide to do going forward beginning in 2026.
Representative Bonner.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. One last question, I promise, and I will let it be. But on, so we covered the gap for 2023 and 2024, but if I understood correctly, the account we've been using to cover these expenses is gone. So, but you didn't mention was 2023. So for this year, how do we intend to bridge that gap?
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Bonner, in the current year, we are managing within the resources that we have. And so we were able to use, frankly, at the end of last year, some more general fund resources from MMB to make sure we could make it through this year. So, frankly, when we made the request last session, when we did not receive funding, we made sure we were able to make it through 23.
And I'll just close this section so we can move on to the next. But this will allow us to have a cleaner budget line as well, so the public has a better idea of what we're really spending in each of these categories. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. It's always a little difficult because it's a blend of general fund resources and the billing of other agencies. So there is some math we need to do. But certainly at MMB, we can always compile what we're spending.
Thank you very much. And please move on to the next section.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So our next change item is an ask to fund the existing services at MMB into the next biennium. As you're all well aware, every year the costs rise due to inflation. And this ask is really funding the growing costs due to expected compensation growth, growth in employer-paid insurance costs, severance costs, as well as growth in our IT rates. This is essentially, you know, an operating ask for MMB. What I do want to point out that is somewhat unique at MMB is that some of our anticipated cost growth at MMB is offset by savings in our lease costs. And this is because MMB is reducing our leased space beginning in FY24 by approximately 35%. But clearly, the savings in our lease rate does not cover the costs of maintaining our services and the anticipated growth in compensation and other line items, hence the ask today. Moving to the next ask, our next ask is about expanding our financial leadership and oversight capacity at MMB. So over the last decade, state programs and financial structures have become increasingly complex. As an example, the number of appropriation accounts in our accounting system has grown by almost 30% in the last 10 years. In the same time period, state spending of federal dollars have grown from approximately $8 billion to $22 billion. However, as the state government has grown in size and complexity, our centralized finance, monitoring, and compliance functions have not. There are some divisions at MMB that have, frankly, smaller complements of staff than they did 20 years ago. At the same time, due to demographic changes in the state workforce, the state government is losing experienced financial leaders and staff. So with all of these impacts happening at the same time, more and more agencies have been turning to MMB for technical assistance and help. So this proposal is expanding our ability to provide financial support to the enterprise and leadership as well, adding capacity in some of our key divisions on the financial side of MMB. So in particular, this proposal adds statewide federal funds coordination to continue the work on implementing the federal IIJA bill and other places where we require coordination on federal funds. Currently, we do have some staff at MMB dedicated to that IIJA coordination. However, those staff are funded with temporary federal dollars from the federal COVID funds that we received, the flexible funds. So those funds do not continue. So without additional resources, we would not be able to continue that coordination. Additionally, we would add some staffing for budget analysis and monitoring. This would allow better support of agencies throughout the budget process and improved financial oversight. We would also add staffing in our results management and program evaluation area. This is an area of MMB that's really nationally recognized for the work that's happening on program evaluation. And right now, much of their appropriations are rider for specific program areas.
May I ask you to hold? I'm so sorry to do this. It's so difficult. I'm happy to pause if you need to step out of the room to clarify something quickly. And I'm respectfully saying that. I'm happy for you to get clarification that you need so that the testimony is you're able to ask your questions. Would you like us to proceed or do you need to?
I'll be later.
We can recess if we need to for a few minutes.
Sure, okay.
Right. Please continue, Deputy Commissioner.
Sure. So past efforts for our results and program evaluation unit have approved efficiency and effectiveness of state investments. And so we would like to add additional staffing in that area so we can do program evaluation on a broader set of programs than those places where we have some specific riders in law right now, limiting the scope of their work. Additionally, there would be staffing added for our banking and payroll services functions. There have been growing tax compliance demands on these units and growing requests for assistance from agencies. So we would like to more proactively assist agencies through implementation in changes in the labor contracts which affect payroll. This recommendation also adds a new banking services director. At MMB, we manage over 600 state bank accounts for the enterprise. This oversight is somewhat dispersed within the agency, so we would like to have a banking services director at MMB. And then lastly, we would also add an additional FTE in our debt management area to work with increased regulatory compliance and improve our internal controls functions in that debt management area. We do manage over $8 billion in our debt portfolio. Our next ask is about our enterprise continuity capacity. So MMB also coordinates continuity of operations planning for all executive branch agencies. The multiple critical events that we've had in recent years have really highlighted the need to move beyond what are currently very manual business processes in this continuity area to a statewide software tool to better support continuity of operations. So in addition to the need for statewide software tools to support this work, trends have indicated a rise in potential workplace violence incidents. We have been asked by agencies to do more work in coordinating more education and training and planning around preparedness and response in these events. So this proposal would add an enterprise-wide business continuity software solution. So this is, again, an ask that's really enterprise in nature. So the software solution would be for all executive branch agencies, boards, and commissions, as well as a centralized mass notification system, which we currently lack in state government. And then three additional FTE, two of which would kind of support these new systems at MMB. And the third would really focus on this workplace violence prevention and training piece. The next request is to establish a statewide internal audit office at MMB. So as part of an enterprise-wide effort to enhance oversight and internal controls, this proposal seeks to establish a statewide internal audit office. Not all agencies have the capacity within their own budgets to have an internal auditor. It's typically the larger agencies in state government that actually have internal audit capacity. So the staff in this central office at MMB would be available to provide audits and technical expertise to agencies that lack their own internal auditor. And they could also focus on audit issues that may impact multiple agencies and work across agencies. So these positions could help uncover internal control weaknesses and fix them before they become bigger issues, such as fraud, waste, or abuse. So this request would add 5 staff to establish this office and support this work enterprise-wide. Then this next item is about enhancing statewide planning, strategy, and performance management. So the state enterprise is clearly a large organization. Often, urgent needs draw attention away from long-term strategic planning, policy research, and cross-agency, cross-disciplinary work to address future issues. So this recommendation would build out capacity to provide the needed staffing for policy, data analysis, strategic, and long-range planning. Minnesota has not had a centralized planning function in state government since 2003. So there was the Office of Minnesota Planning that was eliminated in 2003. Other large organizations, public and private, recognize just how critical it is to have this long-range strategic planning function. This proposal would establish a unit within MMB to do this work with a staff of 15 FTEs when fully implemented. This unit would work across agencies and help address pressing issues that are critical to the future success of Minnesota, but that do not live in one agency's jurisdiction. So examples may be water, workforce, educational attainment, where they cross agency boundaries. I want to acknowledge MMB has been operating in this space in some capacities already, but we've never been really staffed to do that work. It's always been kind of an extra when we have a particularly pressing need and we have time. So what this ask would really do would be to create that dedicated capacity to make sure these efforts don't go to the back burner when other urgent issues arise. So this next change item is in regards to the Children's Cabinet, which is housed within MMB. The Children's Cabinet request is for $1 million from the general fund each year beginning in 24. And what this is really doing is establishing dedicated funding for the administration and staffing of the Children's Cabinet. The Children's Cabinet is currently supported through interagency billing, so that the cabinet is supported by MMB billing other agencies for the staff that exists within the Children's Cabinet, and they're really doing that coordinating work across the administration. So this change would provide more consistent and ongoing funding to support this work, and it's consistent with how this coordination is typically done in other states. It's important to note that the tremendous work the Children's Cabinet has done in recent years. So during the pandemic, the Children's Cabinet was very focused on supporting our child care settings and ensuring continued access to care for families. And recently, and I think we've highlighted this in front of this committee before, but the Children's Cabinet was integral in working across agencies to make sure we had systems talking to each other and we could do direct certification of children for free and reduced lunch programs in schools. So Medicaid-eligible families could be directly certified for free and reduced lunch. So this work is important and really advances positive outcomes for Minnesotans statewide. Then our last item. So this next recommendation supports the establishment of a new agency, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. This proposal creates a transition process for this new agency that allows us to take the time necessary to get this move right. The process includes obtaining authority and resources to support the transition to the new agency and 2 years of planning and then beginning that transition. This implementation office and the governor's recommendation will be housed at MMB with the support of the Children's Cabinet, where we can provide the capacity and coordination for the budget, policy, and administrative planning to support this move. MMB brings accounting expertise, budgeting, and human resources expertise to support this transition. And we will also partner with Minute to support the transition of IT-related functions. The goal with this new agency is to create a sustainable public face for children's issues in state government with aligned outcomes, policy, and funding. The goal is really to ease access and navigation for families and improve service for Minnesotans. The funding in this proposal includes $2.37 million for the implementation office housed at MMB. So this would fund staff on a temporary basis to support this transition work. Additionally, there's $5 million available in a transition account for the purpose of building the shell of the new agency. So that would include staffing, space, IT, and equipment, as well as supporting costs that it may be incurred at existing agencies as they're doing the work to make this transition.
What I'm going to ask you to do is move along quickly to your last slide.
Yeah.
So we have just a few questions that we'll ask after that, and then we'll move on to MNIT.
Great. Right, thank you. Wonderful. So, Chair, members, I will just close that MMB is a central service agency charged with providing foundational supports that enable state government as a whole to function efficiently and effectively with the necessary and appropriate services, tools, and oversight to successfully serve the people of Minnesota. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present our ask today. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time again. And I know we have another presentation. Back to slide number 11, creating a new agency, statewide planning strategy and performance management. Doesn't the governor's cabinet members, don't they communicate and talk now? And how is this different? And why is it, I guess I kind of question the 15 and a half FTEs that would provide that as opposed, doesn't the administration should be communicating already? And I tell me why this isn't the duplicative.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Cleavorn, Representative. Certainly there is communication happening across agencies already. What this would do is really provide the dedicated staff to dive into specific issue areas that cross agency functions. So providing that kind of coordination role across agencies to hone in on those specific issue areas.
Representative Preston.
Well, I won't belabor it, but it does seem duplicative to me for the commissioners and the departments to already be doing this and to add 15 more FTEs. I think the average Minnesota is wondering why government is growing and growing, and here's part of your answer. We just have a difference of opinion on this, but Minnesotans, it's hard for the average family to figure out why government's growing and their budgets and their refund and their tax surplus. This is where apparently it's going in part.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner, would you like any closing comments before we move? Thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate the great service that you provide to Minnesotans. And with that, we'll ask Minute to come forward. This is Minnesota IT. There will be a PowerPoint presentation, but members, you also have an additional handout in your packet if you want to follow along with that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Tomes, when you are ready.
Chair Clevord, committee members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to share the governor's budget proposal that is related to our department. For the record, my name is Tarek Tomes. I am the commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and the CIO for the state of Minnesota. And I'm joined today by Deputy Commissioner John Eichten, and we're going to tag team this a bit. We're incredibly excited to share more information and certainly look forward to more in-depth conversation related to the budget items that we're about to cover. The theme for this budget, and I just wanted to point it out for us, is moving technology forward for Minnesotans. And I think it's really important, the latter part of that, for Minnesotans, because it's a really, really central focus of the work that we do. All of the budget proposals contained herein, and really a lot of the budget proposals in the governor's budget in general, certainly heavily influenced by the work that the Blue Ribbon Council on IT has done and the Technology Advisory Committee. And these budget items really support the recommendations and the implementation of many of those recommendations. Really, the three overarching things that I would love the committee to really focus in on as it relates to the items that we're about to discuss. This budget proposal is really about reducing risk, and reducing risk quite significantly, improving the customer service experience for Minnesotans for how they interact with government, and we'll share a few examples, really driving towards meeting Minnesotans where they're at, and frequently where they're at is in different locations and in different spaces, and allowing people options and agility to interact with government. And then last but not least, certainly, is improving and changing how we work, making sure that we are the best stewards of taxpayer resources, and that we're working effectively, and that we're using the tools and technologies in a way that we are as efficient and effective in delivering government services as we can be. So the first budget item that I'd like to discuss with you is advancing cybersecurity statewide. And really, as an analogy, I think one could view this as just continuing to build a bigger fence, if you will, or building a few additional fences. But as we discuss more of the budget items, it's really a holistic approach that we have to take. We can't just continue to build higher fences. We also have to make sure that we work at the internals of the services and make sure that cybersecurity is interwoven with the technologies and applications and services that are being provided. One thing, and this is relatively new, but I just wanted to share and certainly look at this at your leisure. The World Economic Forum just recently met, I think in the last 2 to 3 days or maybe 4 days ago in Switzerland. And really one of the sobering things that came out of the World Economic Forum, a quite reputable source, is a prediction that there will be a catastrophic, and they use the word catastrophic, cybersecurity event worldwide in the next couple of years. And, you know, really it's, I think, driven by geopolitical activities that are happening worldwide and the spillover that happens when nation states target different countries or organizations from a cyber perspective. And you just really can't contain that. And so the spillover effect and the risk associated with that is quite high. There are three main parts to this particular proposal. One, really, really crucial, and all of it builds on our whole of state approach to protecting Minnesotans' data and information and the services that are provided, and really thinking about all layers of government, everything from tribal nations, cities, counties, educational institutions, and certainly executive branch as well. One key element of this is obtaining $18 million of funding that is a part of the federal infrastructure bill that is intended and directly to support local forms of government. The state would or is required to provide a $5 million match over 4 years, so just one-time $5 million over 4 years to obtain $18 million of federal funding in the federal infrastructure bill. And that would allow us to provide $23 million to local forms of government, tribal nations, cities, counties, local municipalities. We have a statewide cybersecurity task force that is currently developing a whole-of-state cybersecurity strategic plan for how those funds can be used that has broad representation from both rural and urban areas. It has representation from counties, from cities, from tribal nations, representation from public health, representation from the private sector, representation from critical infrastructure providers, and really confident that that group and the various diverse perspectives that that group represents will create a plan that will make sure that that $23 million in funding really improves the state's cybersecurity risk from a local perspective. The second element of this is really work that is crucial in improving and protecting the way Minnesotans authenticate and log into services that are provided from a state perspective, just making sure that the characteristics and the protections that are in what we refer to as an identity management solution have all of the protections that are necessary, and certainly moving and really taking strong inroads towards creating a single identity space, if you will, so consolidating areas where there are multiple identities that are managed that creates inefficiencies. And then last but not least in this space is continuing to build out multiple layers of defenses for the work that we're doing protecting the 2,400 applications that really are the engine behind the services that state government provides. The next slide, and again, you know, and I'll probably say this, unfortunately, too many times, but the next slide, you know, really is a companion to that slide, and it's really shifting fundamentally the way we work, and not shifting the way we work towards a new and emerging space, but really shifting the way we work to a way that the world in general works, and that is moving the infrastructure services that we provide and embracing a multi-cloud space where we are literally paying for what we use. When you are using capital expenditures and buying and outfitting data centers, you have to buy capacity to ride the peak loads, if you will, and that means that at times of the year you have excess capacity that goes unused. This allows us to move to a cloud space that will ensure that we're literally only paying for the services that we use, that we can accommodate those peak loads, that we can burst out excess capacity. We will have more innovation available for us, the things that are quickly and rapidly evolving in the cloud spaces. And then last but not least, these spaces allow and provide for greater resiliency. They allow for a greater ability to recover in the event that there is a cyber event or another event or any other event that necessitates any type of recovery. It really puts us in a place where we're moving to a future-proofed way of working. I think in the out years, and certainly very difficult to quantify, but I think in the out years it's safe to say that there would be cost avoidance opportunities just related to our ability to use cloud resources when needed and not have to invest in capital expenditures in on-premise. And certainly a reduction in data center footprint is a core component of the work that we're doing in this particular space. The next area that I would like to discuss with the committee is what we refer to as targeted application modernization. The application portfolio for the executive branch of government is approximately 2,400 applications in size and includes everything from large applications to smaller applications. The team from M&B referenced the ERP system, which really is one of the most critical systems in state government, and having sustainable operations and maintenance funding while we're also navigating towards what the future of the ERP looks like is very, very critical. But not all 2,400 line of business applications have a particular change item related to that. And this is really geared towards establishing a funding source that will support an improved customer service experience, an ability via governance, together partnering with the legislature, with the Technology Advisory Committee, with other stakeholders that will allow us to identify opportunities where we can dramatically improve customer experience, also dramatically reduce the risk that we have from old technology. And behind every old piece of technology certainly is older ways of working. And so that keeping at the forefront that customer experience and being able to transform the way we do things. Things, for example, like renewing driver's licenses online, as we did in the pandemic, where over 300,000 Minnesotans were able to renew a driver's license online. Finding those opportunities together with a governance structure that helps highlight and illuminate those opportunities. I wanted to just, you know, maybe share this one. Sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, and literally that funding source is geared towards finding these and identifying these opportunities that exist. And it can be everything from automation, using robotic process automation to automate tasks that are currently done manually, really driving at the efficiency and effectiveness of government, or modernizing how someone interacts and the ability to quickly receive services. This picture here is the way that a number of critical services from DHS are obtained by Minnesotans. The picture on the left and the picture on the right, I think, speaks for itself. ApplyMN was the old mechanism that Minnesotans applied for those crucial benefits, hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. And the picture on the right is the modernized version of that. Literally took that application process from 1 hour to less than 10 minutes, has customer sentiment built into it, and really core and parcel to the success of that particular activity was it started with a human-centered design activity where we literally, together with a partner, Code for America, interviewed Minnesotans with how they interacted with these services that led to the design and will lead to an effort to continually take that customer sentiment that Minnesotans are sharing with us in this particular application and continue to evolve and improve it, but also put more services behind it. The previous version required a login and an authentication. Actually wasn't necessary. The new version does not require an authentication and a login, certainly saving 50 minutes of time for hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. If we do the rough napkin math, I mean, that is literally over a couple of decades of time that we have returned to Minnesotans in transacting with government. This particular funding capacity is geared towards that customer service experience and that customer service transformation. The next one that I would like to share with you is related to the Children's Cabinet and the work that the Children's Cabinet does, and really, I think, a partner companion, if you will, to the change item that we just heard from MMB. This creates necessary IT capacity to really implement and support the interagency work that the Children's Cabinet undertakes. Currently, there is no dedicated IT capacity, and so when the Children's Cabinet undertakes an interagency effort, we literally have to stop work that is happening at an agency, use capacity at that particular agency, and that means that other priorities stop. This creates capacity. Examples of this is using direct Medicaid certification to support kids that are eligible for free and reduced lunch benefits. An interagency effort between the Department of Human Services, between the Department of Education, and certainly has been highly successful. Over 50,000 kids were certified for free and reduced lunch benefits. But the necessary IT capacity really had to be borrowed from different places to support this. And this creates IT capacity that will allow government to move quicker on the opportunities that are identified to help children and support the work of the Children's Cabinet. I'd like to pass it over now to Deputy Commissioner Eichten, who will walk through the remaining change items, Madam Chair.
Deputy Commissioner, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Eichten. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota IT Services. I'll cover a couple of the change items being proposed for offices within Minnesota IT Services, as well as the cash flow and operating adjustment. The first one here relates to the Minnesota Geospatial Information Office. We talked a little bit about GIS technology at the agency overview. Representative Nash talked about his background. not commonly known, but MinGeo is an office within Minnesota IT Services that used to be part of the Department of Administration but came in with consolidation. They lead the collaborative collection of geospatial information, so essentially mapping data and information about the physical features of the state of Minnesota. They work with counties, with federal agencies, with cities, and regional governments to jointly collect that information and then create products and services from that information that are used not only by local government and state government, but by academia and the private sector as well. To give you a few examples, this is data that helps target solar installations. It helps with flood planning and flood mitigation activities. It helps with construction for MnDOT. It helps with forest planning for DNR. There's really a broad range of uses for data, this type of data. In addition, we're talking about LIDAR data. If you've heard about the incredible advances in LIDAR and the ability to essentially do flyovers of the state, map the physical features of the state, and very much improve planning through much more rich data sets. To give you an example, this office, because of a relatively flat budget over many years, they are engaged in these collaborative data collections but lack the funds to actually produce the derived products and services that industry needs to leverage this much more rich LIDAR data. So we're proposing an increase of roughly $734,000 and slightly higher in the next biennium. These are biennial totals to support their leadership activities in this space and reduce the duplication of effort that would otherwise occur where counties and various state agencies are going to collect data on their own, and oftentimes that data not being consistent or able to be brought together into a holistic statewide view. Flipping to the other office within Minute, this change item is for the Chief Information, it's the office of the Chief Information Accessibility Officer. You may have encountered Jay Wyant, who's our CIAO. He leads an enterprise function that seeks to make the online services and web content, images, words in websites, as well as the tools that we use internally and externally, more accessible to those with disabilities. So folks who maybe have visual impairments or develop intellectual disabilities. Minnesota has really been a leader in this space. Other states and the national associations look to us for resources and services, but there's not been an increase to the operating budget for this team since 2013. So we are requesting an increase so that we can maintain their current service level and really meet the increasing demand for accessibility testing and accessibility support in the procurement process, because many of the tools that we rely upon are vendor tools, and we need to work with those vendors and other states to continue to push for improvements in the accessibility arena. The next request is related to Minute's operating adjustment. This would, as was previously said by Deputy Commissioner Ray Tan, help us address increasing labor costs, compensation costs, separation, retirement costs, as well as insurance costs. To give you an example, Minute carries, as a result of the funding that was provided in 2019 by the legislature, we carry cyber insurance that covers the entirety of the executive branch in the event of a significant cyber attack or incident. That insurance rate nearly doubled in the upcoming or in the current biennium. So this gives you a sense of the, both the personnel and the non-personnel inflationary costs that we're working to address through this operating adjustment to be able to maintain current service levels. The final item, number 8, relates to cash flow assistance. This is really cash flow assistance authority for Minute to receive cash flow assistance from MMB. This has been part of the biennial budget bills, I believe, for the last 5 biennia or so, really ever since IT consolidation occurred back in 2011. There's a lag in time between when we incur expenses on behalf of agencies and then when we are paid back by those agencies for the services that we render to them. That creates a cash flow problem, and via this assistance, we're able to address that in partnership with MMB. All assistance is paid back within the biennium, so this results in a neutral proposal, a net zero proposal. Though it is, since it is budget related, it's carried in the budget bill. We are also proposing that this authority be put into Minute statute via our policy bill this session so that we don't need to, I guess, waste your time with the same conversation every biennium. So I am happy to answer any questions that the committee might have and appreciate the opportunity to present these proposals.
I'll just ask one question really quickly on this cash flow authority that you're requesting. That would allow you more clout maybe when you're negotiating contracts with outside vendors or?
Madam Chair, I would say without this authority, our ability to negotiate on behalf of the entire enterprise and leverage the full buying power of the enterprise would be, it would be almost non-existent. We need to be able to make a purchase on behalf of the whole executive branch, sign one contract with a provider, and then recoup those costs via monthly invoicing over the course of the year. So without this assistance, you know, our ability to really be a single IT provider and the sole IT procurement agency would be extremely challenged.
Right, thank you. Members, we have 10 minutes, and we have on the list Representative Nash, Representative Hewitt, and Representative Nadeau. So I'll just ask that you please ask your questions and response be succinct. Thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Commissioner, you and I have had this conversation, but I'd like to get it out in the open. So 2011 consolidation law was passed into reality. Statutorily, there are agencies that are supposed to be in the consolidated environment, and I know for a fact that there are several who are not. Can you tell us what your efforts are going to be to force that consolidation to actually shore up both the efficiency, cost effectiveness, and security of the outlying agencies, and then perhaps what stick you might need from the legislature to perhaps goad them along to become compliant?
Commissioner Tom.
Chair Clearborn, Representative Nash, thank you for that question. And, you know, we probably may have, you know, slightly different perspectives on this particular question. While I certainly appreciate, you know, the help that the legislative body could provide for that, it's no longer necessary. We are completely 100% consolidated. All technologists in Minnesota work under one organization. All technologists in Minnesota support one fundamental mission. We all share in the same mission, vision, value statements. The work that we're doing really has shifted from a consolidation to an optimization, and now we're really looking to drive that digital experience. And while what you're sharing, Representative Nash, was true years ago, everything that we do from a technology perspective across the executive branch and all agencies that are within our executive branch purview is really intentional on our part. And so when we maneuver or make a move, it is intentional, not because someone wants to or doesn't want to. And so from our perspective, certainly the consolidation activities ended a couple of years ago, and I'm really proud of the work that we have done over the past 4 years to bring that consolidation activity to a finish line. And now we're really working towards how can we not only leverage the efficiencies that are gained, but how can we thrive? How can we meet Minnesotans where they're at with the digital services that we provide?
Thank you so much. I'll represent Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, in conversations that I've had within even just the last number of days, that's the message that you've just given is contrary to what I've been told, and I know from BRC and TAC conversations, so we will disagree on that. And I know you know what the agencies that I'm talking about, and I don't believe that they're consolidated fully in all of their efforts. And they continue to flex their muscle based on their perception of themselves. So we will save that for another day. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Lead Nash, Representative or Vice Chair Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, again, I haven't been on this committee for a term, and coming back to it and knowing that when I was first elected, this really was a circus in your area. It scared us all as legislators because we didn't know where we were going to go and we didn't know where the governor was going to go. And I have to say what you've done and where we've gone and where we've been is amazing. It's so cool to return to this committee and see the work that has transpired, how you've taken this department and really went out. So the governor got the best person here, and we didn't have to look too far from you. Too bad for St. Paul. So we're so happy that you're here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I'm glad you're here, too. So I have just I have two questions. I learned just today from MMB they had a fund balance that they've been using to buy down some costs. Does MNIT have fund balance that you guys actually use to cut to fund some of your moves? And then the second thing, and maybe I'd like to start here. I don't have a lot of experience in this, but this sure seems like a significant increase in the base spending. Is that the case, or am I reading this wrong? Am I just not understanding this? It seems big. So can you talk to that first and then talk about fund balance, please?
Representative Tones, when you answer that question, if you would just add mine with that as well, the systemic disinvestment that you've had over the years as well. Thank you, and please respond.
Thank you.
Commissioner, sorry.
No worries. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and Representative Nadeau. It certainly is a significant increase, if you will, but I think it comes from historic underspending. And it has to be bifurcated in a couple of different areas. One, not only do Minnesotans deserve the digital experiences that they expect, we really have to intentionally work towards those. And you know, pointing towards the hundreds of thousands of driver's licenses that are renewed online and pointing towards the transactions that Minnesotans did with our unemployment insurance systems, how we interact in state parks. Bringing those digital experiences to Minnesotans requires an investment that is really, really crucial and brings about an efficiency in government that is essential. The cybersecurity risks and threats are, as Representative Nash is well aware, are very real. And our ability to stay ahead and continue to invest in those layers of defenses is really crucial so that Minnesotans don't experience a critical disruption in government services. We're all aware of the events that happened in the news. Just recently, the FAA had to ground airplanes for a number of days due to aging technology. The 2,400 applications in our application portfolio, a significant number of those are older than 10 years, which means that the ability to patch and secure right now requires building bigger walls and bigger moats, which is inefficient and ineffective. And our ability to modernize those applications so that we can make sure that the layers of defenses that we're putting in place are crucial. We use a lot of different benchmarks, obviously, across the technology space and across the technology sector as it relates to the investment and spend in IT compared to the total investment and spend in government. And while these items certainly represent an increase in the base, they're not minute items. They're executive branch items, and oftentimes they're actually statewide items. We have this collective opportunity right now to reduce our risk and change the experience that Minnesotans are facing, and then this budget really is aimed at addressing that. And I want to turn
Deputy,
a fund balance question
Deputy
with you.
Deputy Commissioner, I won't downgrade you to representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to clarify one thing in the figures you're looking at that might be a bit misleading, which is the increase that's shown relative to the base is relative to minutes direct general fund appropriations in past biennia, which are very minimal. Less than 2% of our total spend is a direct appropriation. We are by far and long a chargeback organization, so the vast percentage of our revenue is from services that we provide as a fee-for-service organization to the agencies. So what you're seeing there is an increase in the direct funding that goes to Minute for a more enterprise strategic approach to investing in application modernization. In the past, those dollars have flown directly to agencies based on the applications they request. What the governor is proposing here is that the IT organization prioritize what is most important and what those biggest opportunities are. So it's a difference in the way that dollars are appropriated, that in the way that the information is presented in the budget book appears to be a big increase. But when you compare it to the $600 million IT spend that occurs every year, it's a much smaller percentage.
And I would clarify the language you used. It's not misleading. It's somewhat confusing.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau, really quickly, because I'm going to let Representative Bonner close out. But did you have a follow-up?
Oh, the only thing was I wanted you to address the fund balance.
Oh, yeah.
Internal fund balances.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, so our fund balance, I think the equivalent would be our revolving fund, so which is the fund that we use to charge back for the services that we provide. The budget of that revolving fund is somewhere in the neighborhood of $210 to $220 million a year. That's the spend associated with centralized services that are common for all agencies. The balance at any given day or week fluctuates, so I would have to get back to you with a precise number on essentially cash on hand, if that gets at the question that you're asking.
We'll move on to Commissioner or to Representative Bonner. We'll
get thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Bonner, we have less than a minute. Please go.
Thank you. I'll try to be really quick, and I just want to throw out a couple of quick facts, and I'll ground us in why I'm giving you these. So in 2021, we estimate the cost of things like ransomware cost about $1.85 million to individual businesses. 32% of individuals who have ransomware pay the ransom but only get 65% of their data. In other words, they've potentially given away their banking information, they've given away their money, and not necessarily gotten rid of the cost to get rid of the malware or even get their data back. The city of Atlanta had their services shut down, cost them $2.7 million in recovery services. While folks were unable to pay their taxes, they were unable to pay their water bills and basic essential services. The state of Minnesota is considerably larger, considerably more complex, and what we continue to hear from everyday citizens is that they want us to meet them where they are when it comes to services. We have an incredible opportunity to use technology to modernize, to update our security and our efficiency, especially in light of challenging circumstances with staffing. And as we've heard today, there is a common thread about modernization and security. The consequences of not acting to modernize, the consequences of not adequately funding our IT spend are incredibly stark. And we need to be very well aware of that as we have these conversations and be mindful of that. And with that, I will just finish with, I also want to acknowledge that we have come a very long way in 4 years from some disarray to recently getting an A rating in the state for our IT efforts. And I would not want to steal your thunder in case you have a comment on how we got that A rating and what incredible work went into that.
This is the beginning of a conversation, not the end of a conversation. And with that, I will thank you so much for the expertise that you do bring to our state and your commitment to serving all Minnesotans, both of you. Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned today.
Thank you.